Welcome to the teaching ministry of Grace Fellowship Church in Bradenton, Florida. We invite you to join our pastor, William Rogers, as he continues his study of prophecy and his verse-by-verse study of the book of the Revelation of Jesus Christ.
Amen. All right, we're continuing our study of the period of time known as the millennium. And someone asked me if I could do 15 or 20 messages on the millennium. I said, well, I could, but I don't think I will. But we're going to look at this tonight. We're in Revelation chapter 20, and we'll be looking at verses, actually 1 through 6 still. So I'm going to ask Mike if he'll read 1 through 6 of Revelation chapter 20.
And this is from the New American Standard Bible. Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, holding the key of the abyss and a great chain in his hand. And he laid hold of the dragon, the serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. And he threw him into the abyss, and shut it, and sealed it over him, so that he would no longer deceive the nations until the 1,000 years were completed. After these things, he must be released for a short time. Then I saw thrones, and they sat on them, and judgment was given to them. And I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded because of their testimony of Jesus, and because of the word of God, and those who had not worshipped the beast or his image, and had not received the mark on their forehead and on their hand, and they came to life and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. The rest of the dead did not come to life until 1,000 years were completed. This is the first resurrection. Blessed and holy is the one who has a part in the first resurrection. Over these the second death has no power, but they will be priests of God and of Christ, and will reign with him for 1,000 years.
Okay, we are looking at this subject called the millennium. And what we're seeing here in this section is actually all in one period of time. If we were to look chronologically at the book of Revelation, we would find ourselves in a period of time that is not considered the tribulation period, and it's not considered the kingdom. It's that 75-day interval time. And so it's a very interesting time frame there. But when Christ comes, at the second coming, that ends the tribulation period. But it doesn't necessarily start the kingdom. So what we're going to do tonight is look at that 75-day pause, or that middle period there before the kingdom actually starts. Well, that's what we're seeing in chapter 20, before it starts. We're seeing, last week we began looking at this, and we began looking at the angel coming out of heaven, having a key to the abyss, and a great chain was in his hand. And this is the way the kingdom is. The road to the kingdom is being prepared so that it can start. I find it very interesting that this kind of a description is given, and we looked at this last week, where Satan himself is bound. And so this angel is coming to do a job. In fact, it's interesting to read the commentaries because they get into the detail of how many different things this one angel does. I think John MacArthur says 6. John Walbert says 8. And so you begin to look at this, but the thing that to me is interesting about this time frame right here is that it is for 1,000 years, for sure. And most of everything that we looked at last week, as far as questions, all are related to that period of time. Very few people had something that just was not actually related to the kingdom. So all that we heard last week is going to fall during that period of time. And we know that there's a lot of things. And so, when you look at the 75-day period coming into this, I think the first thing that I always ask myself is, can you really prove that there is a beginning to the kingdom? Can you really prove from the scriptures that there's going to be a literal kingdom? And if there is going to be a literal kingdom, Where in the scriptures does it say it, and does it designate it as 1,000 years? These kinds of questions are I keep on my desk the whole time that I'm reading and studying the book of Revelation, because it is so interesting to me to see that many of the commentaries can't answer those questions. They can't deal with the intricacies of proving this period of time. That's why there's so much controversy on it. That's why you have more people today that are your amillennialists instead of your premillennialists. Now, when I say amillennialism, what is that? And don't say it's a creature you found in your garage. Mike.
They say there is no millennial.
Okay, basically, negates the word millennium. So there is no millennium here. We're in the millennium. We're living it right now, where Christ reigns over the hearts of men and women today. And there will not be a literal reign here, which means that everything in the book of Revelation that speaks to the millennium must mean something else. If it can't mean a literal kingdom, then it must stand for something else. And if that's true, then everything back here in the Old Testament that speaks to the millennium, if there is no millennium, but yet it speaks to a millennium, it must be speaking to this time frame here. The church age. Well, I certainly wrote, there's the church age. If there are Old Testament passages that speak to a millennium, I just want to restate this again, then it must mean the millennium in which we are living today if we are an amillennialist, right? And so every verse of Scripture that deals with the millennium becomes characteristic of the church age, right? Which makes it difficult, because of Revelation chapter 20. For example, do you think that Satan is bound in here? Did you see him today? Some of you may have talked to him. But he is not bound. We know that Peter, for example, talks about Satan as a roaring lion, walketh about freely, seeking whom he may devour, in the church age. And we know that Satan desired to sift Peter as wheat, destroy him. And where there's all kinds of passages in the New Testament where we see Satan is alive and well. Paul, for example, in the book of Acts, from Acts chapter 9 to Acts chapter 25, had to deal with Satan and the demonic activity 4 times there. And so we see this. Timothy talks about this. 2 Timothy refers to the doctrines of devils and the fact that Satan is alive and well. So it can't mean what the amillennialists say. To me, it's one of the easiest things to prove against or speak against something, and that is the amillennialists. Now, when I say premillennialism, what does that mean? Pre in front of millennium means what? What's before? Pre, something comes before the millennium.
The rapture.
No, it's always, when you deal with millennialism, you're dealing with the second coming. In other words, it's pre-millennial, post-millennial, amillennial. But when you're dealing with tribulation and you say pre-trib, mid-trib, post-trib, you're dealing with rapture. In other words, where does the rapture fall? So when you say anything related to millennium, you're looking at where does the second coming fall. And the reason it's so interesting with the amillennialist is that if there is, this is not here, then where does this fall? It's not there. So it's back here. So the tribulation period even becomes a period of time that at best they're confused with. They don't really know where to put this. And I know that strictly out of the mouth of amillennialists that I've talked to. So, when we come to this, and we look at Revelation chapter 20, for example, we are looking, if we were to just read it, as a very casual reading, not looking for anything deep here, or try to exegete the words, we would see chronologically, and this is what we talked about last week, it falls perfect in line with the teachings of Revelation. 19 is the second coming of Christ. Chapter 20 is the kingdom. Chapter 21 is the new heaven and the new earth. You can't get it any laid out any better than that. And so we see literally that this is a period of time. In fact, we even see there is a time frame here known as 1,000 years that is designated. So it tells us that this period of time is not eons and eons and eons like Augustine believed. He believed that the day is symbolic of an age, and took the teaching out of Peter that says one day is with the Lord as 1,000 years. And so he finally comes up with 330,000 years this thing is going to last. That's a long time. That's longer than the church age, isn't it? How long is the church age? Okay, about that. So, it's always interesting to me to read and to study and to see what other people say about this. But there's still other controversies that are surrounding this period of time that we find right here in Revelation chapter 20. Some of these I will give you because they help explain some of the other things, and some I will not give you. Just for the simple reason we don't need to look at them. But Revelation 20 is a very interesting chapter. Now, we're looking at Revelation 20, verse 1. We're looking at, we talked about this last week, the angel coming down. We don't know who this is. Perhaps it's Michael, perhaps it's not. The point is, we're not meant to know who this is. But the second point is that he has the authority and the power to do what he's being sent to do. He has this power and authority, and he's sent directly from heaven, having a key for the abyss. Now, the abyss is an interesting word. We didn't look at that last week, because I wanted to hold off on that and give you a little bit more information on the abyss. Now, when we see the abyss, and we're looking at it here, we are looking at something that is telling us much more, I think, than what we actually see listed here. We don't find much here other than this angel has the key of the abyss and a great chain in his hand. And then verse 3, he threw him into the abyss and he shut it and he sealed it. So wherever this is, whatever this is, Satan is cast in there, or literally thrown in there, and a great chain is binding him. So we look at this and we realize that there is a very specific angel coming to do this work. And this work is to... let me read you what John MacArthur, how he puts it. He said he's going to do very specific things. Number one, he's going to lay hold of Satan. Number two, he's going to bind him for 1,000 years. And that's not accurate. He's going to bind him, and the binding is for 1,000 years. He doesn't actually bind him. The chain bounds him, and he locks him up. Three, he's cast him into the abyss. Four, he has a key, and he locks him in. Five, he sets a seal on the... It says on him, but he really sets a seal on the abyss. And six, he loosens him at the end of the 1,000 years. So, this angel is... I get the feeling, when I read Revelation 20, that when he comes, he's smiling. He may not actually be smiling, but I'm smiling. As I'm standing back and I'm watching, I'm smiling. And you will be too. And we're going to show you a verse a little later that indicates just that thing. So, we're going to look at this as this angel is casting him into this place of the abyss. Now, I want to give you this information about the abyss because I believe this answers the question that people ask, and that is what I got through, I think I got 2 or 3 phone calls this week and 3 emails. Where are the demons? If Satan is cast and locked up and sealed and sent out of the way so that he does not deceive the nations, as verse 3 talks about, where are the demons? Well, the demons are in the abyss. They have been locked back up into the abyss. The abyss is their abode. Now, there is a parallel name to the word abyss. In the Greek, the word abyss, transliterated, would come over to us as bottomless. And we find in Revelation chapter 9, for example, the bottomless pit. Look back at Revelation chapter 9. And I'll show you some. Y'all remember Revelation chapter 9 because it was the demonic chapter. In Revelation 9:1, the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star from heaven which had fallen to the earth, and the key of the bottomless pit. You see that? It's the same word. It's the abyss. Now, Peter talks about this abyss in 2 Peter 2:4. The pits of darkness, and he says, reserved for judgment. It is the place where demons are sent to be reserved for their final sentencing to the lake of fire. Now, that becomes an interesting thing because demons, you know, last week we talked about if we were to have angels here, then we could take a line and stretch out from angels and we could branch off of angels and have good angels and bad angels. And then we could take a line off of bad angels and we could have I think four or five other divisions. We could have pits of darkness angels. We could have temporary. We could have permanent. We can have already judged, have been in judgment, have never come out. They're still locked up. And so you have all kinds of classifications. But the one thing that remains consistent is where they are. They are in the abyss. And when we read Revelation 9, we see that these are belched out of the earth, so to speak, in this first part of chapter 9, verses 1 through 6. Black, thick smoke. And we know that that's coming out, and we know that this is demons, and we've already spent the time on that, so we won't spend any more time on that. But they are to walk the earth, and they are to torment the souls of men. So bad, so horrible is the tormenting that it says men will seek death and death will flee from them. Well, we don't know how long they're there. We don't know how long their actual walking of the earth is, but we do know that they are put back in. Because if they were not put back in, then the words that we looked at last week that define and are used as descriptive words for this kingdom would just not be appropriate. Times of refreshing, peace, times of calmness, 1,000 years of peace, and there's like 6 other names that are referenced to that period of time that would not be appropriate if demons are still running around taunting us and working in our on the souls of men. Yeah.
If hell is where they live,
but they don't live in hell.
They don't live on the earth. Do they live? Is this on the earth?
They are based or housed in the abyss. That's not their eternal judgment. It is a temporary holding judgment. It is sometime or some type of incarceration where they are actually held there in chains and bonds.
Is it on earth?
But we don't know where it is.
Oh.
It's a bottomless pit, wherever that is. That's not equivalent to a sinkhole. But I know that's been on the news a lot. Did y'all see here, by the man that was swallowed up on the golf course?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is that crazy or what?
I didn't hear that.
Well, if Mike will tell you about it after it's over. 2 Peter 2:4, the pits of darkness, referring to the bottomless pit, or referring to the abyss. It's the place where demons are sent to be reserved for their final sentencing. The final destination of demons is the lake of fire. It's the same final destination of Satan. It's the same final destination for the beast and the false prophet. It's the same final destination for all unbelievers. And so when we look at the abyss, we're looking at something different. We're looking at a different place. It is not the final hell. Now, does that mean it's lesser of a judgment? We don't know. We just do not know that. The fallen angels go there because they are on their way to the final hell, the lake of fire that has been prepared. Scripture tells us three times that the lake of fire was prepared for the devil and his demons. So, we look at that, and so ultimately they're going to end up in the lake of fire, which burns with fire and brimstone forever and ever. Now, this is not it in Revelation 20. This is what is called the abyss or the bottomless pit. Matthew chapter 25:4 says that it was prepared for the devil and his angels. So the point of this, I think, is twofold. That he gives us in verse 1 of Revelation 20 is to say he has the key to the abyss, the pit, or the bottomless pit, or the abyss, signifying to us that it's already locked. He has to unlock it and throw Lucifer or Satan into there. And so with him are all the demons locked up. He lays hold of the dragon, the serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. So, this chain is a chain that is used to bind them. In fact, we are told, we used the illustration last week in Mark chapter 5, coming off of Mark chapter 4, in which the demonic man had a legion of demons in him, and the best of the chains of men could not bind him. So, these chains are the chains of heaven that can bind him. And they bind Satan himself for 1,000 years. Now, that in itself is interesting. Yeah, Mike?
The angel of the abyss back when you, I don't know if you've read up Revelation 9 yet, but it says they have as a king over there in verse 11, the angel of the abyss. Is that the same angel that...
We don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. You're reading out of Revelation 9?
Yeah.
Now, that tells us they're not locusts. That one verse you just read proves they're not locusts. Okay. Which proves to us that they're demons.
And that's Abaddon or Apollo.
That's right. That's right. And the reason that proves that is because we go to Proverbs, and Proverbs tells us locusts have no king. Demons have a king. And it gives us the name right there in Revelation chapter 9. So that just becomes an interesting thing to look at. Not that it's a very controversial thing. What's funny is in all the resources I've read this week and last week, there's no one disagrees with this. No one disagrees with where the abyss is or who's there or how long or whether angels or demons and Satan are actually there. That's not a point of contention. Now, in Luke chapter 8, verse 31, Jesus was casting demons out, and the demons say to Christ, the demons speak about this place. And it's not a place that they like to go. They don't go there and hang out and sip coffee and wait to get out to go torment people. For, listen to what he says from the demons speaking this in Luke 8:31. You don't have to turn there, but if you are there, then you'll see it says this. He says to Christ, "Don't send us to the abyss." Same exact word as bottomless pit in Peter and the abyss here, or bottomless pit in Revelation 9:1. So, they don't want there. They don't want to go there. Jude talks about the fact that there's even another containment place in the abyss in which angels have been reserved for judgment since before the flood, indicating to us that they were probably the demonic activity that was marrying with men and women. Not that they were, which I want to make sure I say this right. They were demon-possessed men on the earth before the flood. And so those demons have been in chains until then. And then you come into Revelation chapter 9 and you read something a little interesting, especially beginning in verse 13, that the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four horns of the golden altar, which is before God, one saying to the sixth angel who had the trumpet, "Release the four angels who are bound at the great river Euphrates." And these four angels who have been prepared for the hour, day, month, and year were released so that they might kill a third of mankind. And the number of the armies of the horsemen were 200 million. That is demons. And that is how big this abyss actually is. So I would imagine when the abyss is opened and they're let out of there, they go crazy. Man, it's like they're running wild over the earth, tormenting the souls of men in Revelation 9, 1 through 5, and then Revelation 9, 13. Man, this is, they're given this power, and they're not given the power by their king. They're given power by God. It's a judgment. And so when we look at this judgment, we are looking at a judgment in Revelation 9, two different times there, where a judgment is happening on the earth and demons are used to accomplish the purpose and the will of God. And that becomes a very confusing thing. Now, here is another aspect of the perfect will of God being shown to us in Revelation chapter 20. And this time, they are bound. They are restricted. They cannot come out for 1,000 years. Is 1,000 years a long time for them? Yes. Because of the confinement, because of where they are, they would rather be out. And we get that from, if we had nothing else, we can base it on Luke chapter 8, verse 31. Don't send us there. That's not where they want to go. That's not where they want to be. Now, I would imagine that when we read Revelation 20, an angel coming down from heaven having the key to the abyss and a great chain in his hand. You think Satan was happy to see that? No. After all, he has been living his dream here. He has been the king over his kingdom. Right? But he's not the King of Kings and Lord of Lords that we find in Revelation 19 that is going to give one of the angels permission to lock him up. Now, that excites me. Yes, ma'am.
Are these demon angels the same angels that we find in Genesis?
Jude and Peter talk about those angels that have been in chains. Now, some say that these are probably the same ones released in Revelation 9:13. Some of them were released. So we just there's no way we would know that.
So they're not the ones from Genesis.
No, I'm saying there's no way we would know that. And the ones in Genesis aren't seen. We don't know who they are. They just indwell men at that time. And so you have demon-possessed men marrying the women, and they come up with the offspring. So that's just before the flood in Genesis chapter 6. Now, there's all kinds of theories on that stuff. That the demons themselves actually married the women, and it produced a giant group of people on the earth called the Nephilim, or the giants of the earth, and they were half demon and half man, or half demon and half woman because of the offspring there. And I think that is absolutely not true. Because demons do not intermarry with flesh. Spirit does not marry flesh. And so that. So, we see that the abyss is not a good place. It's not an exciting place. It's not where they want to go. And I tell you that because I'm telling you that when we look at Revelation 20, verse 1, the angel is coming to do something that the recipient of his coming, the recipient of his action, is not looking forward to it. He's been in charge. He's been having the freedom that he's had, and this is not what he wants to do. So when we look at verse 2, he laid hold of him, the dragon, the serpent of old. Where does the serpent of old take us back to? Where do you think it says that?
Genesis.
It takes us all the way back to the very redemptive plan of the ages was from the garden to the second coming. And so this is a reference to that. Who is the devil and Satan and bound him for 1,000 years. Now, I would imagine he's not a happy camper. And because he's not a happy camper, it makes me think of this verse in Revelation chapter 12. Look at verse 12:12. For this reason, rejoice, O heavens and earth, you who dwell in them. Woe to the earth and deceive, because the devil has come down to you. That's his fourth abode. He's now going to be restricted to the earth. And look at what the devil realizes in verse 12 of chapter 12. Might read that last phrase.
Only a short time. Knowing that he has only a short time.
The devil has come down to you having what? Great wrath.
Knowing
that he has only a short time. Now, isn't that interesting? What does that say about his free will?
Huh?
Yeah. He is bound by God. He cannot change it. He cannot change the plan and the will of God. You just can't do it. So, when we look at this, we're looking at that, and we're seeing that he can't change it. He knows he's got a short time, and whether he knows exactly what's going to happen there, you have to just say, I don't know, we can't prove it. He can read a Bible. Does he read the Bible? Does he know what was written here? You can say, well, yeah, surely he reads it. Or he's heard it in church. Well, most churches he hadn't heard it. But he can read, he can think, he can respond, but does he know here? We just do not know. But the abyss is not the final, eternal resting place. Now, I like to use that word, resting place, because it's a stopping place, but there will be no rest there. And it's a place of torment, certainly a place of punishment. It's a place out of the presence of God. It's a place of incarceration. It's a temporary place where God sends demons, and where, in this case, he binds Satan. Now, that's interesting in itself. Satan, we have every reason to believe, Satan is bound, and most of the demons are not bound. So that in itself is interesting. Except for what Jude talks about in Peter, there is a group of angels that are in chains there also. Now look at verse 3. He throws him in. I always get the picture of verse 3 as opening up a lid and just tossing him and shutting it real quick so that he can't get out. Now whether that's exactly what we see here, we don't know. But notice it doesn't say he dropped him in. After all, it is a pit. Right? It does have a lid on it. It does have a chain and a lock on it. So when he unlocks it, how come it doesn't say they put him in there? Or he's dropped in there. Or he kicks him in there. It says he throws him in there. And he shuts it and seals it over him so that he should not deceive the nations any longer. Notice it doesn't say a lot of things that could be said. He's not going to be the accuser of the brethren anymore. But now I want you to notice, it does say people here. The word for nations is peoples. That's what nations are. It's not that he doesn't deceive the land masses across the world. It's that he doesn't deceive people anymore. And so this is the characteristic of him, that he should not deceive the nations any longer until... which tells us right there, he's going to get out, and he's going to do it again. He's going to deceive the nations again. And you got to remember now, this is a period of time that we looked at last week is known by all those words we use. And what's the one word that it's known for above all the other words? We said one word describes it. Peace. Right? He is going to be let go at the end here, to deceive the people one more time. Now, how does he get people in there to do that? How can you get people in an environment like the Garden of Eden to sin and to come against God? How many people does he get? 3, 500, 200, 1,000, 3,000, 10,000? He is able to get together an army so big you can't count them. Now that's interesting. That is an amazing thing. It's almost like when you begin reading and studying this doctrine of eschatology and you come under the heading of the millennium or the kingdom, it's unbelievable to read this. The atmospheric conditions on the earth are going to be changed. The age of life is going to change back before it was in the flood, to where men will live longer on the earth. 100 years old is just a child as far as age-wise. Now, what's the oldest living person before the flood that we know of? How old was he? What? 969. That's pretty old. Now, will people live that long? Well, yeah. They will live that long. I read an old sermon by John MacArthur that he wrote probably back when he first took on the church, and he's talking about the kingdom here and the garden-like or Eden-like atmospheric conditions, and he talks about things that are related to in Genesis as far as the atmospheric conditions being controlled by the mist that waters the earth. Well, that's not what happens. And we looked at this. How many were in the study in Genesis on Wednesday last time? Very few. Okay, well, those that were there, you saw, we proved that that's not how the earth was watered. It was watered by streams and by springs of water coming up out of the earth, not from a mist from heaven. And so we proved that. Now, John MacArthur has corrected his doctrine on that now, by the way. If you get one of his newer sermons on Genesis, he says that he was wrong in his early years, and it took a lot more study, but now he realizes the difference. But we look at this time on earth, and we see that God is going to cause the deserts to blossom, to bloom. In fact, I've got a place where you can look at that. In fact, I'll give you a whole bunch of this later. The wilderness will do springs. Isaiah 41 talks about the desert will bloom, and there will be springs of water flowing through there, nourishing the land. But now when God cleans up the earth, and people come into this, they're coming in with, yes, fleshly bodies. Flesh, human flesh, flesh and blood, will actually survive the kingdom. All believers coming in here. There are no believers here, which is interesting in itself, which means this period of time, 1,000 years, is going to be, at its beginning, all believers. Now, the ones that are there like us, that we're going to look at when we get to verse 4 here, we're going to try to get to verse 4 tonight, we may not, is going to be, we'll be there, but we'll be there in our spiritual bodies. Now, that's interesting in itself. Because here again, you start looking at the characteristical traits of the kingdom, and it's almost like Carol says,
like a fairy tale.
Do you really believe that? And she can look at me with those big old brown eyes, and I go, well, yeah. It's an amazing thing to think. We're going to be there ruling with Christ in our spiritual, glorified, resurrected bodies through the resurrection. And there's going to be flesh and blood. There's going to be earth that's going to continue as it was, like it was in the time of the Garden of Eden. People coming in are going to repopulate the earth, and it will be a population explosion like the earth has never seen before. Because of the 1,000 years of Garden of Eden type of characteristics. It's amazing. It's going to be absolutely incredible. Now remember, we begin seeing this stage being set over here in the last few days with the topography of the land. God is changing. No more mountains, no more desert. The sea levels will change because of the bottoms of the sea will come up, and the water will be dispersed among all the earth, and we're going to get into where all this is listed, to water the whole earth in such a way that Every area will not be, there will be no desert lands. There will be no mountainous plains. It will all be very fruitful and productive for whatever vegetation will be where there is. In other words, the atmosphere over the whole earth is going to be the same. That's incredible to me. And so we're going to look at Isaiah 41 is one of the good chapters on that. But we're going to give you a lot of those when I get to that. But the point of this is that with this kind of a setting for the kingdom, and Satan is bound, there's no demons, the natural question people have is, but will there be sin? Flesh is flesh, isn't it? So flesh born here is not going to be any different than flesh born right there. It's still flesh. Which tells us what? What does that say about the people born in the kingdom? I mean, think about this. What? No. They will be just like people born here. Are people here born without sin? No. Now remember now, in this period of time, Christ will be visible to all people on the earth, ruling from Jerusalem. One mountain on the earth. And it will house the temple of God. Now, it's in Jerusalem. There will be Christ ruling the earth, and people... No, that can't be. People are going to see Him. Now imagine this. Follow me here. People can see Christ in His glorified body, not the full Shekinah glory, not the full heavenly glory, but they're going to see Him like He was seen on the Mount of Transfiguration as He was looking here, except shielded some because of flesh. The same hearts that are here can actually reject a physically walking around being called Jesus and not believe it. No, that can't happen. Actually, their eyes can see Him. Can you imagine now people can see God, He's ruling, and still not believe it? That's not true, is it, Michelle? That can't be. I mean, all it takes is seeing Him to believe it, right? And then, will you straighten me out? Go ahead.
Did they see Him for?
Yeah, touch me.
They're sheep also, right?
What?
They are the guys that will believe are sheep, even in the millennial.
Well, we're not told they're ever called sheep. We know that they will never experience a resurrection like those before the kingdom. But there will be people saved.
Have they chosen?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Christ knows exactly who will be chosen and who will not be. Yes?
But isn't there an expression, it's not biblical, but it seems like it's based on...
You mean you know an unbiblical expression?
There are no grandchildren. So you have to...
Wait. I got to think on that one for a second.
A person has to come to their own decision, or has to be saved.
That's what you mean by grandchildren?
Yeah. There are no believers because they're in the family. They have to be.
I hope you get your mind straight up in the mountains of Arizona. It is Arizona, right?
Yeah.
And you are going to be a mountain man, right?
I am going to be a mountain man.
Okay, Paul?
There's only one little difference. I'm kind of making fun of that little bit of difference between when He walked the earth before He was crucified in this period of time. It just shows His glory. He showed everything else while He was here. So why shouldn't they have the same type of crowd?
Look at all the
miracles. It's absolutely incredible to me. But let me tell you, when you look at the people born in this kingdom and you realize they are going to reject Christ, they're not going to be obedient to His rule, they're not going to even like Him. That's incredible. because we know the nature of man, we know the evil of man's heart, we know the wickedness in his heart, we know the lostness, we know the separation between the heart and God, we know the alienation there, we know the enmity there, we know that it's not hard for us to see people are going to be born there and actually reject their king. But it's incredible to think it. It's incredible to think. Now, you think, okay, here comes Jesus. He's coming in the door. Why would I not believe that? Now, let me ask you, what do I mean by not believe that? Paul.
They're dead.
They're dead? What do you mean they're dead? No, they're alive. They're spiritually dead. That's right. The people born, remember this, have no spirit in them. They are comprised of a body and a soul, no spirit. Right? Now, the spirit comes at salvation. So if they don't have it here, they are unable to discern spiritual truths. 1 Corinthians chapter 2, chapter 1, verse 14. Or is it 2:14? 2:14. Somewhere in 1 Corinthians is that verse. Right? Okay, you got me.
Are you saying all or some of the people that are born?
All of the people born have no spirit.
And will reject Christ?
No.
Not all.
No, some will receive Christ.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, some will believe. There will be people that are believers. It's 1 Corinthians
2:14.
2:14, like I said. Did I see another hand up?
Yeah. I just wanted to say for clarification sake, what you're saying is that the nature of
man, so I'm not clear.
Again, the nature of man is no different at birth than it has been since Adam.
Never
man
changed.
Man has not yet changed.
And that is one of the things I believe it's showing us when we look at the kingdom. Everything about man changes. His environment is going to change. Christ now being physically in front of them is going to change. Atmosphere changes. The earth changes. There will be a time of refreshing upon the earth. Satan is not there. Only condition they can blame is the heart. It's the heart. And that's absolutely astounding to me. I read a commentary I can't even think of the guy's name now. Albert's notes. I can't think of the first name. Anyway, he says this. What real lesson could we see if this was a literal kingdom? What real, in other words, why consider that as a physical kingdom when we know it's a spiritual kingdom over here? And besides, what could you learn from us? Why would God give us a physical kingdom? That's His justification for not believing it. Man, I can think of all kinds of truths. First of all, the Word of God is based upon it. The truth and the accuracy of His Word says there will be, so there is that. But the truth about the wickedness of man's heart, we are going to finally see that they're not a product of their environment. They're not sick. They are dead spiritually, and no matter how good the conditions are on earth, the heart is desperately wicked. And that is wonderful to see, yes.
And we see that even in light of the very physical presence of Christ amongst them, that they are still spiritually bankrupt and unable to ascribe himself to God in any way.
Even though he's walking the earth with them, they can do nothing to offer assistance in their own salvation. Nothing. It has to be as much God doing it here as God doing it here. Right? That's incredible. You need to remember that. That is one of the tremendous truths that are here. The world, you think the atmosphere is going to be perfect. And there's not going to be a devil. Just your heart.
I just got a thought.
Uh-oh. Did he hurt?
That's dangerous. We have three major adversaries in the age in which we're living.
That's right.
We'll only have one.
That's right. Their own heart. Their flesh. We have the world, the flesh, and the devil.
Well, the devil's been taken out of the way. And the world system of which that is referencing is influenced by the prince of the power of the air, the devil. It's his system. That's removed. That's what he's indicating in verse 3. He cannot deceive the nations. He cannot set up his demonic system. It's only the flesh. Paul, very good. Yeah.
The thing that amazes me is, well, God tells us that this is going to happen. It happened at the cross, except that Christ was more not revealed as much at that point. I mean, he was letting everybody know who he was, but they did the same thing. They hated him. He who walked among them, they hated him, and they put him on the cross. So it's the same thing. We're talking about the flesh and the heart. And it's unbelievable. To me, when I read it, it was the most flabbergasting prophecy I've ever read.
Okay. What is it that flabbergasted you?
The fact that man is just so evil that, and you know, the heart is so evil that God has known this from the beginning, and He said that's what's going to happen, and it's going to happen.
Yeah, isn't it interesting that He's going to use the perfect environment of the Garden of Eden
to show how sinful man
to show how sinful man's heart is. That's incredible. Yeah.
It also makes sense that if everyone in the kingdom were a believer, what would the sense be in turning Satan loose at the end?
Well, that's
the problem. I mean, then it might as well be eternity.
Well, see, that's one of the clues we have in verse 3, because it says, so that he should not deceive the nations any longer until. So he's going to go back to it, and it's going to work. It only can work because he's got the flesh. And so we see that right there, to me, makes it an extraordinarily interesting time to study. Is that period of time that we're going to be in our spiritual bodies. We can't be tempted by the evil. But are we going to actually fellowship, talk to, walk down the road together, eat together with flesh? It doesn't tell us. I know y'all were hoping I'd say yes. But it just doesn't tell us. But it does say, and we're going to get into this in a few weeks, get into the jobs. What is the role of the church there? Well, we know right off, we're going to reign with Christ. When? Then. We're going to reign with Him, and we're going to rule the nations. That's interesting. Because so is Israel. Well, they got a different role. And the scriptures are very clear to give us the job description of the Jews or the nation of Israel and the job description or the role of the church. We're actually going to see what we're going to be involved in. I can't think of anything more exciting than that. And I promise you, nowhere does it say that you've got to listen to me play a harp. And you know I can't sing. So, Michelle may sing.
So the sociologists, the psychologists, the anthropologists will finally have a utopia of society and yet still have all of the problems with man because there is not an island of good within himself which he can improve.
Yes. That was a mouthful, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you can see why the millennium has interested me over the years. Yeah.
Well, there's another interesting thing too, because in the tribulation, Satan was deceiving the world through the false prophet and through the Antichrist because of delusion. But now they're gone. So now it's just as Paul's saying, it's revealed as what it was all about in the first place, which is the heart.
Right. And it's like, I know that when I shared some of this at that church in North Alabama about the heart, and it's like people would look at me like, what? You know, that I don't know that anyone of them ever caught it of what I was telling them about the wickedness of man's heart. because I didn't emphasize it like I am there, because you know I've grown in the knowledge of the doctrines of grace, and so that's one of them, and that's understanding the depravity, the wickedness of our own heart. Now, what's the advantage of seeing the wickedness of our heart? What does that tell us when I understand how wicked and desperately evil and sinful my heart really is?
That tells me that we need a captain in our soul to direct us every day.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you clarify just a little bit?
You want that faith in the verse of mine?
No.
We've got to trust Him with all our heart in every little piece of time and every decision. Otherwise, we're going to fall short because of our desperately wicked hearts.
Okay.
Jeremiah 17. Therefore, we cannot afford to lean into our own way.
Okay. Well, you're right. But there's still one other thing I'm looking for, Michelle.
Lord, have mercy on me.
That's right. Because the more I understand my heart before Christ, the more I see it was God. It was God that did this. Just like it's going to be right here. It's God's got to do it or it doesn't happen. Right? You see, that puts all the glory back on God. None on me. None. Hoda?
It's all very prideful for us.
Yes, it is. It would be if it was us. That's what the Ephesians talk about. We can't boast. There's nothing to boast about.
No.
Except the fact that God did it. We can boast on Him. That's right. Mike?
I read a commentary the other day that they said that the reason why this was happening was because the parents weren't teaching the children right in the millennium. The parents had forgotten.
You heard it. What's happening? What's happening?
The sin, the whole thing about the end.
Somebody was talking about the millennium.
Yeah, that they were the people who went into the kingdom were not teaching their children right enough of who God is and what He's done for them and so forth, and therefore they strayed. That's what the commentary was, and I said that don't make sense.
Okay. Well, there's a lot of people who think that people are evil. Or they have machine guns or AR-16s and they walk into theaters or schools and shoot people because they have been brought up in an evil society. They are a product of their environment. They were born on the wrong side of the track, and it's the wrong side of the track that influenced them. Well, what does that say about this time frame?
Same thing.
It's nothing, doesn't it? Not the same thing. And they're going to have as perfect of an earth as you can actually have, because God's going to make it perfect, and they're still bad.
Will there ever be a time when man will there be no more sin?
Oh yeah, right after the devil is cast into the lake of fire, then we're going to see, that's when we're going to get into Revelation chapter 21. And we may or may not ever get there, but we're headed that way, okay? Yes, ma'am.
They probably are different. The nations are different now about what we're talking about. The nations won't be the boundaries.
See, you're thinking continents and countries, mm-hmm. and states. This is talking about people. Okay?
Okay.
This is a reference to the peoples. The people of the earth. The topography of the earth changes. Nothing is going to be the same. The only thing we know is going to be different with boundaries will be the land of Israel. Okay? So, but that's a good question, because we tend to think nations as Argentina. They produce posts. Somebody called in on one of the shows last night and said, how come y'all keep putting at the bottom, rolling across, he's from the Americas? When he wasn't from America, how many Americas do we have? I'm thinking, really? That was a question? Let's see, there's North America, there's Central America, there's South America, then there's South, South, South America, and then there's then there's Argentina. Yeah.
So during this time, the rule is going to be like kind of like having a England, where they have a king.
Oh no, no, no.
No.
Hopefully it will be nothing like England's king. Nothing is going to matter to me. You know, if that's what the Lord wants, we can have that kind of system set up. But it's not going to be like that. Okay? It's going to be paradise regained. Paradise has been lost. This was paradise lost back here in the garden. Mm-hmm. It's going to be regained here. The world will be different. There will be no mountains. There will be no wilderness. There will be fruitful plains. There will be perfect environment. Atmospheric conditions, the lion, the lamb, everything will be... the curse will be removed from the earth. You know what that means?
Wow.
You can work in your backyard with no stickers. Yes, ma'am.
It seems, well, it is, from the Garden of Eden until the moment of eternity, man is basically the same, a fallen being.
That's exactly
and
right.
I'm seeing all these different ages of God working His work in all these different time periods. When you think about the kingdom being right next to the tribulation, they've just gone through the worst of the worst and hated God.
Wait, okay, good.
And going into the kingdom hating God and being in the church age hating God, and being in the Old Testament times hating God. God is doing the overarching work in it all. And it's not, it's just, I just am amazed.
You put it together real well. Very good. That's exact. Think of the contrast between this period of time and this period of time. And the heart doesn't change. Judgment doesn't bring them to God. The perfect environment doesn't bring them to God. Satan reigning here doesn't bring them to God. Satan locked up in chains here doesn't bring them to God. It's amazing. No sunburn here. And I'm not saying that to be facetious, because the sun was literally almost melting the flesh off of their bodies over here, and that didn't bring them to God. And so, we see the God. That's very good. So, what does it take to get man to God?
God.
The Holy Spirit.
The Holy Spirit.
Jesus Christ. Can it be any clearer than that? Obviously, it's not real clear. People choose to not believe it. You think maybe it might reflect the heart, perhaps? Don't know. So, this is the kind of thing we're looking at. Now, someone will also say, who are the spiritual bodies, the spiritual beings coming into the kingdom? Well, Revelation chapter 20 answers that. Believe it or not, it answers that. I had a call this week asking me and begging me on the phone to explain them. I said, well, it says it right there in black and white. Look at verse 4. Now, I want to see if this week you can pick out the people in verse 4. What? Possibly. That's one group. Look at what it says. I saw thrones, and they sat upon them. And judgment was given to them. And I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded because of the testimony of Jesus, because of the Word of God, those who had not worshipped the beast or his image, and had not received the mark upon their forehead and upon their hand, and they came to life and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. Now, that tells us all of the candidates for spiritual bodies that are going into the kingdom. Even though it never says any of them. It gives them to us. It tells us who they're going to be from the very word when he says thrones. That's going to tell us who certain people are with thrones. Those that sat upon them is another group of people. And then those that come after that is another group that's implied here, that I'll show you from Matthew where that comes in. And then those who have been beheaded that did not receive the mark, or they received the mark of the beast. They did not receive the mark of the beast. They are the ones. So there's four groups here. even though it doesn't simply say who they are. So the question I always have is, Lord, how come you couldn't just tell us who they are? Because it would be so much easier. And I think, you know what I think the answer is? It's so obvious. And He does tell us. So, it's easy to pick out one group, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who's the one group you can pick out? Tribulation saints. How can you pick them out? They were beheaded. For what reason were they beheaded?
No mark.
Okay, they didn't receive the mark. They weren't deceived by this false religious system set up at the middle of the tribulation. Yeah, Michael.
When the eternity comes, it said that those who are not, that were beheaded for the word of God and stuff, they will be priests of God. Why would we need a priest in eternity?
Okay, what that means, Mike, is that this happened at the resurrection. All believers become individual kingdom of priests. We're all priests in the sense that, can anybody explain that to anybody? Anybody want to try that? That's a good doctrine. It's called priesthood of the believer. That's what it's called in the Baptist circles.
We have the privilege of going directly to God. Anything we need, we don't need a priest. We are a priest.
Exactly right. Did you hear that, Mike?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Paul, can you say it again and look at Mike?
Not him again.
Yes, and Mike again.
Generally, when I ride him around in my car, he's always asking me Bible questions, and I always tell him that I charge him 50 cents for my little sermonettes, and he never pays, so I don't know. Michael, it means now that you've got God living in within you, you are a priest. You go to God the Father. You don't need a priest. In the Old Testament, you did.
And in eternity, a priest is just like being a man.
Thinking about that, looking at you, that's hard for me to imagine.
priest Mike, you know that?
Or, it's a good thing it's not Father Mike.
Or something.
Yes.
Women aren't called priests, are they?
We're not going there. Yes, they are.
Okay.
I mean, as far as the priesthood of the believer, women can have their access to God just like men can. Good question. Okay, y'all, we won't go any further than that. I'll explain verse 4 next time. But if you want to try to research that, you can see what you come up with and how you can prove that it's going to be Old Testament saints. It's going to be the 12 apostles are listed there. The church is listed there. And the tribulation saints are listed there. Four groups. Yes, ma'am.
Welcome to the teaching ministry of Grace Fellowship Church in Bradenton, Florida. We welcome you to join our pastor, William Rogers, as he continues his verse-by-verse study in the Word of God.